Hey everyone, I'm Kyrie.
Hello, everyone. I am Bree.
And this is CSI Talk. Hey everyone, welcome back. Another week, another episode of CSI Talk. Hi. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to let you all know that if you could save space for you, we all love you and you are welcome here. Okay, whenever you want to come here, just to chill out after a long day at work or at school. We love you and we're here for you. So today we're going to start doing something we told you guys we're going to do for a very long time. And we're going to start from scratch, actually.
Today Let's start from the very beginning.
Yeah. Oh, season three news of CSI Vegas first. Yeah, we haven't seen much of Josh Folsom on the set besides that whole cast picture. I think they're holding off showing Matt Loria to keep the mystery alive on what is happening to Josh Folsom, what is going on with him. We don't know. I think it's going to go on the same route as Spencer Reed you all watch Criminal Minds, you all know what I mean. Spencer Reed went to jail. Anyway, I think going on with more or less the same route. Maybe it could be different. Maybe it's having posted bail. Anyways. Also from one of Mandy's stories on Instagram, I don't know if we're going to have a regular coroner. I think it's good to have this rotation of coroners, but it would be good if we had a regular coroner like we had with Doc Robbins and Dave. Dave can make an appearance. I don't know. I would love to see Dave back on the screen. I love that.
Me too.
Or even like Doc Robbins coming back. I love to see him come back. I love to see Super Dave come back. Or just cameo or something like that. I mean, because Catherine came back, Jack came back, Grissom and Sarah came back. But you know what I want to see? I want to see a bad guy coming back. I'm dying to see a bad guy I want to see coming back? Natalie Davis. That's the bad guy I want to see coming back. I love her. I mean, I absolutely hate what she's done to Sarah, but I really would love to see her coming back. So, yeah, that's what we got from season 3. Oh, movie recommendations with Kari. I saw Napoleon, the movie with Joaquin Phoenix and Vanessa Kirby. Great movie. Great battle scenes, not for the faint of heart. So if you're watch CSI, if you're listening to this, I assume you don't have a faint heart. But I don't have a faint heart, dude. Even I got scared by some things that happened in that movie because I know all about the Napoleonic Wars and a lot of things that happened during that period. But dude, I was not expecting so much blood. Anyways, that movie is great. I really feel like Joaquin Phoenix is probably going to win the best, like the Oscar for best actor. Anyway, so the name of this episode, we're going to cover the very first episode of CSI New York. It's called Blink. The very first episode from the very first season, it was written by Esme Zeiker and directed by Darren Serafian. It aired on September 22nd of 2004. The official synopsis is the team find three young women, all of whom appear to have been brutalized in the same way. With a possible serial killer at hand, the only witnesses that they have is the woman who survives, but she can only communicate through blinking. Photographs found at one of the crime scenes lead the team to a couple that had sponsored one of the victims, the boyfriend who claims he hadn't spoken to her in weeks, and the owner of one of the buildings where a photo was taken. Okay, so right off the bat, this is the third series, the CSI Crime Scene Investigation Universe.
I think those three, all first episodes, all dealt with a serial killer.
The Bree is right. The first three episodes of the first three TV shows of the first
three. Say that five times fast.
Yeah, they all had to deal with a serial killer. Why? Because, I mean, it picks our interests. Even like one of the topics of my completion works had to do with a serial killer because it is interest. It deviates from the normal behavior. And this is the third show of this universe. And right off the bat, you can see that it's different from Miami and Las Vegas because of the tone of the show. Visually, it's different because it's a lot more neutral. While Vegas, the tone of the show, it's a lot more greenish blue. I know some people watch the Twilight movies. They're like, oh, Catherine Hardwick invented the blue filter. No, CSI was there and they invented the blue filter for CSI crime scene investigation first. I have to admit that. And I've seen all of the Twilight movies repeatedly. CSI crime scene investigation has like this bluish green filter. CSI Miami, there is a lot of saturation going on. And then in CSI New York, you see it's a lot more neutral thing. The tone of the visually, it's a lot more different. And when you first see Max Taylor, which is the leader of the team, first of all, he is wearing a suit. And then I realized that the leader of the team, like, because Grissom is the leader of the team, Horatio Caine is the leader of the team in CSI Miami, and Mac Taylor is the leader of the team in CSI New York. Only Horatio and Mac Taylor wear suits. And Grissom is like, oh, I mean,
Brad this one. Suits?
Yeah, but Emily, I'm talking about like the leader of the team. Like, Grissom is like, oh, let me put a t-shirt
on. But remember,
in
the very first episode, Brass was the leader.
Yeah, I mean, was he really?
Yeah, he was the supervisor.
Well, anyways, Mac, he's in the church. Grissom is not a huge fan of churches. I mean, we can count in one hand how many times we've seen Grissom in the church. From what I've seen of Miami, I've never seen Richard Daniels in the church. I mean, not even when he got married, he didn't. Spoiler alert, if you haven't finished watching CSI Miami, Horatio Caine marries Eric Delco's sister, and then his sister gets killed. She goes later. There's only that. Don't even get me started on the age gap. Anyways, so Max Taylor, he's in the church when he gets called to a scene. At first, we maybe think that he's in a church because he's Catholic or something like that. But then you would find out in the end of the episode that he is there because maybe he's asking for forgiveness because he donated all of his wife's stuff. Because if you guys remember, we covered the episode, his wife passed away on 9/11. There was a crime scene in Central Park, so he meets up with Detective Del Black. I love Black. He's one of my favorite characters in CSI New York. I love him. He's really cool. I really like him.
I like Montana.
So he tells Mac that they found the body of young bone woman. So Mac realizes that is a body dump. That is a body dump. She wasn't killed there because there is no scuff marks on the body. And the victim was redressed by the killer because he even pointed out to the belt that the victim is wearing because the victim would always wear her belts on the second button of the belt, and the killer did not even bother to do it like the victim would usually do it. And yeah, CSI can really tell that, like, when killers dress up their victims, it would not be the same as the victims dressing themselves. And he realizes that the victim was married. So he's like, someone out there is missing a wife. Yes, you too. You are missing a wife as well. So the next scene, we are introduced to Stella Bonacera. I love her. She's one of my favorite characters in CSI New York as well. I really liked her. She heard on the radio about the murders. Actually, we are introduced to her at the same time that we are introduced to this other character, Danny Master. Danny, I really liked him until I found out that he cheated on his then girlfriend that would turn out to be his wife later. So yeah. She goes to Mac, and Mac has pulled an all-nighter, apparently, because he never went home. I mean, what's up with his supervisors that never go home? Anyways.
Right to the jobs.
So Mac, he goes
back unwillingly.
Yeah. He wakes up Dr. Hawks. He has a room next to the morgue. I figure that maybe all coroners have rooms next to the morgues to rest in between. Hawk shows Mac there are levitating marks on her back and contusions on her neck. And there are levitating marks on her, horizontally on her back. Hawk actually tells Mac that the COD was not because the victim bled out. It was not because the killer strangled her neck. She died of a stroke. If Mac wasn't really good at his job, he would have said that, well, this is a natural death because strokes can actually happen naturally. Fox also tells Mac that the victim inhaled something just prior to her death. And Estella tells Mac that the victim is Liam Goodman. So Estella and Mac, they bring her husband to ID the body because the last time he ever saw her was several days ago at lunch, and he tells them that he put her in the cab after they finished eating, and that was the last time he ever saw her. Aiden Byrne and Denny
wish Aiden never left.
Well, I wish a lot of characters from this crime shows never left. And Danny, they ID'd the substance that Leon inhaled as a fire stick. And Danny realizes that that is the new, at the time, that was the new date rape joke drug. Meg is like, well, why would the killer give her a date rape joke drug, but never sexually assault her because the rape kit came back negative. The victim was never sexually assaulted. Mac is like, well, the killer just wanted her to be out of herself, but he doesn't have any more time to think because he gets called to another scene. A young dark-haired woman was discovered in a dumpster with the same neck contusion in the horizontal lividity. If you can recall what lividity is, it's this marks, like kind of like marks their legs on the body. They're caused by some foreign objects after the person dies. And when the body is left for a very long time after they died. So like if you watch the episode, the victims have like this horizontal marks on their backs. It indicates that they were lying for a while before the killer dumps them. And whatever was behind her back, watch the mark on them. And Mac is like, yeah, we've got a serial. That is debatable. When I was doing my research for my completion work, according to the FBI, it really depends. Like every police department, they got their own definition of serial killers. It can be two victims. It can be three victims, but they all have like the, but generally is always two or more victims with the same modus operandi, same characteristics. When I studied that, I went with the FBI definition because it seemed more formal for my research. But you can go with whatever you want to. Hawk actually realizes that this victim now was strangled to death. And the killer broke her neck post-mortem. And at this point, the CGI got really better because they actually showed her neck
getting broken,
like just the bone, and you can even hear the crack of the bone breaking. Just like the other victim, the rape kit came back negative, which means that the killer drugged them with the rape drug, but he didn't rape them. And Mac also realizes that the victim has golden teeth. And he's like, oh, she's of Russian descent. Because one thing about Mac, he used to serve. He was in the Navy. And that is important throughout the whole series.
Wife's death, which you find out at the end of the episode.
Yeah. But it's also like important throughout the whole series. There's like this episode that they do that has to do with World War II and the Nazis, the Nazis in New York and all that. There has to do like a both approach. It's a beautiful episode. Like this whole thing about Max serving, coming from a military family, this whole background that Mac has. I mean, he really adds up to his character and is really beautiful. Mac goes and sees a old mentor, Dr. Giles, and he wants a medical burst because he wants to see where the killer would have examined, would have touched the victims. So he does that. This is not the first time that we've seen a CSI behave like this. We would see Grissom do the same thing, building his own miniatures to try and get in the mind of Natalie Davis, which is quite common, actually. Back at the dumpsters, Danny, he finds a camera with film is still in it. So Aiden and they go back to the lab to process it. And once the film is processed, they see the victim with New York tourist locations. And she's posing with a man that seems to be her boyfriend. And on the final picture, it's taken outside of a house with the city as a background. And in the picture, she's blowing a kiss to the photographer. They check missing persons, and the identity of the woman, of the second victim, is provided. Her name is Zoe Pavlova. She is a young Russian immigrant that is living with his sponsor family, the Ivanovs, right? Yeah. So, Mac and Stella, they visit them to tell them that they found her, they found Zoya, and they're like, why did you wait so long to report her disappearance? And they were like, well, she had a boyfriend. She's gone for a very long period of time and all that. It would take days for her to return. And they also tell them that Joy had a boyfriend called Jason Parnell. So he is a vendor in Manhattan, and he does tell them that Zoya was his girlfriend, but he hasn't seen her in like 5 days. So he just saw that they were done. But so they take him back to the precinct, and I love how Flack behaves in this situation. Like, I love how Flack behaves around suspect, because like it's really cute and really funny. Because like Jason is like, I swear on my grandma that I didn't do anything. It's like, oh, can I swear on his grandma that I'm going to take him to the prison now? Really funny. So, Mac and Stella, now they are using, and whenever they use math to do this stuff, I feel like I'm bad in high school and I'm not understanding a damn thing. But then I actually understood what they were doing. So they are triangulating. So they take the picture that Zoya is blowing the kiss to the photographer, and they usually like the background because they identify the buildings, and they're like, according to the height of the building, we can like calculate the distance and the house that is way in front of. It's like they triangulate the distance and they found the house that Zoya was in front of. Okay, it's math. Okay, and neither one of us is good at math here. Okay, so we're trusting Mac and Stella, like, wow. Okay, live your truth, man. We don't understand them, but okay, live your truth. They go to the house with Fleck and they find another victim in the basement. She's on his left and hooked to a ventilator, but she's still alive. So Mac goes with the victim to the hospital, and Stella once again asks Mac if he's okay. Because at this point, my man hasn't been sleeping for like 2 or 3 days. And so the CSIs are all over this house. Danny cannot find any fingerprints, but Aiden finds some semen. I mean, I don't know, Aiden, I'm not even sure. Like at this point, like Aiden, she's a cop, but she's also a CSI. Maybe she's like Sophia. I haven't seen all the CSI New York episodes. I'm sorry if you guys have.
Well, a lot of them are cops and CSIs.
Yeah. So the doctor at the hospital tells Mac that the woman is not even responding to any stimulation or even the painful ones. Mac starts to processing her and he's explaining everything that he's doing as he's doing it. After he's photographed the bruises on her neck, she is blinking. No. Okay. Fleck is able to track down the owner of the house, Mr. Silo, and he's brought in for questioning. And Fleck says that how come I cannot find any transactions of the person that rented your house? And Silo is like, well, this is not me. This is the company that handles everything. And then Danny comes in and he's like, can I swab your mouth? And the guy is like, oh, no, you can't. And then like he tries to say something to Black, and then Danny just comes in and swabs his mouth. But it's not a match anyways. Mac, he goes back to Dr. Giles. I cannot pronounce his name anyways. And Giles, he tells Mac that the victim is suffering from a locked-in syndrome. And the killer wanted that. His victims from certain pressure points and literally locking them inside their own bodies, which means that he's paralyzing his victims from the neck down or like eyes down, like Mac puts it in. Yeah. And the two first victims were failures, and he was perfecting his techniques. But the final victims was success. Mac is like, the last victim saw the killer, but she cannot tell us what happened. Because like Dr. Giles tells Mac that Luxing syndrome is irreversible. Mac is like, okay, I'm going to go and question the victim and use a blinking system with pictures of the other victims. Mac tells her to blink twice for yes and once for no. He's going to use this system with other victims throughout the seasons. I've seen some other episodes in which Mac uses the very same system for other victims when they cannot communicate because they are either blinking too much or they cannot speak. She blinks and she tells Mac that she doesn't recognize any other women or Rhea's husbands or Zoya's boyfriends. But when Mac shows her a picture of Mr. Silo, she blinks twice and starts to convulse. Twice is for yes. She recognizes him. Went into cardiac arrest, but the doctor tells Mac that she went into a severe stroke and she is brain dead. So Stella, she finds Mac at the hospital and tells him that the semen that they found in the house is not a match to either Silo or Jason Parnell. So Mac is brainstorming with Stella, you know, at the church. Apparently they go back to the church. I don't know why they go back to the church. They are at the church anyways. So That was like the killer acts are his diabolical, calculated, and personal. Again, I think Profiler would have been a great addition to CSI. But what I'm saying is because like a profiler would have not seen this killer, any killer as such as an enemy. He would have seen the killer as just someone who does evil deeds. Someone, you know, not just an enemy, not just the devil, because if you see a person that, you know, it's quite complicated. If you watch Criminal Minds, you know what I mean. Mac sees the killer. This is the killer acts as intimates. They go back. Mac is like, well, we need to go over the evidence that we have again. Okay, so they have a reconstruction room, which is a lot better than the reconstruction room that we have back in Vegas. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, probably New York has a lot more money than the people in Vegas do. So they see
they
a sign.
Probably also, they probably, I think they also have a bigger population.
Yeah, probably they do. Yeah. So the CSIs, they go through every piece of equipment that they found using some sort of chemicals. And they find, then they show BI in Russian's letters. And apparently Mac can read Russian. Okay, good for you, Mac. And Mac says that they overlooked the Zoya sponsor family, the Ivanovs, and especially the husbands, Bogdan Ivanov. So Ivanov is the husband is running some questioning. And the husband admits to Mac that he did have a relationship with Zoya. And Mac's like, yeah, there's a lot more to that. Mac tells Ivanov that he killed Zoya. And he killed Zoya trying to lock her inside her own body. And he actually, he tells Ivanov that the other victims, he found the other victims because he was a taxi driver. And Ivanov, he then asks Matt if he knew what his name meant in Russian. And of course, Mac knows that because Mac actually knows that. And it means gifts from God. And he, Bogdan Ivanov tells Mac that he killed those women because they wanted to be free from their cares and free to let their minds wander, to be free in the land of their dreams. Sir, I can assure you that this is not where any woman wants. He also tells Mac that Zoya wanted to be taken care of, and he was freeing her and the others. Mac says that this wasn't about freeing the women, but about controlling them. Like, yes, Mac, you're absolutely right. This was not about freeing them. And he tells Ivanov that he left the final woman alive because he couldn't kill his one success. I mean, Mac says that all the women died for the same reason that Ivanov got caught, because Ivanov didn't know how to let go, which is in itself a lesson for Mac, because Mac cannot let go. Mac, he goes back to visit the last victim, and he tells the victim about his wife, Claire, that died on 9/11. And he tells the victim that he got rid of everything that Claire owns because it brought him too much pain, except this.
This bowl that had her breath in it.
Yeah. And after he leaves the hospital, he goes to the side of the World Trade Center, which is where the Twin Towers used to be. His Mac cannot let go of what happened to his wife. And it took a while to get used to, right? It's a lot to get used to. That's not at first. So, I mean, I understand where Mac is coming from. But that doesn't mean that he has to pull an all-nighter in the job. Like, what's up with supervisors and pulling two shifts? Like, what's up with that, you know? But anyways, I think this was a great episode to introduce us to the characters and to the show as a whole, like the CSI New York as a whole. Because, I mean, this show worked out. CSI New York worked out.
Yeah. And this would be, it will be posted after Christmas.
Yeah, because that's on me, guys. That's on me, because I'm telling you guys.
So, happy belated Christmas. Happy belated Kwanzaa. Happy belated Hanukkah.
Happy Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. And like,
happy early New Year's.
Happy early New Year's. That's on me, guys. I keep telling you guys to go and ask for help when you need to. And I've been telling
somebody she needs to get help.
Yeah, and I went and got help, but I mean, not too late, but I mean, later than I had to. And that's why we are late. But that's a lesson. If you guys need help, go and look for help, okay? But we love you guys so much. And thank you for this incredible year of our podcast. Full of uncertainties because of the strikes, but season 3 is coming, and we just updated our calendar. We're gonna be covering some episodes of CSI New York. So stay tuned for that.
And next week's episode is the 34th floor, which is season 7, episode 9
of the CSI Crime Scene Investigation.
CSI New York.
Is in New York? Yeah. Wait, aren't we covering Ray and...
That's accurate.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, there is someone that asked us to cover Ray.
And asked.
No, they only asked us to cover Ray. And I thought it was better if you cover Ray and Haskell. Because we cannot talk about Ray without bringing up Haskell's. This is coming. In 3 weeks, we're coming with Ray and Haskell. Okay, Haskell. I mean, I have so many things to talk about Haskell. I really like Haskell, despite everything he's done. I really like him. So, thank you guys so much for listening to us. And we love you guys so much.
Love y'all. Bye.
Bye.